Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Abby, the Podcast Lady. We have another guest on. I have been loving having guests on the show lately, and it's all thanks to Podmatch, who has been hooking me up with some really great guests, and I'm super excited for you to meet today's guest. We have Jim Tracy joining us.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate and I'm so grateful to be on, Abby.
I am so excited to be hooked up with you. You came through on Podmatch and I'm like, this is an immediate yes. Like, this seems like such a good fit. I think we have a lot that we can get into, starting with the fact that we are both from the Midwest.
Yes. Yeah. I spent a lot of time on Highway 23 going through your town because my wife was in Duluth and I was in the northeast corner of South Dakota. So I wore some slots in that road.
And someday maybe they'll fix them.
Yeah. Not till after winter now, though.
Exactly. Yes. My husband works road construction, so he's off for the winter. It'll get fixed next year. Well, Jim, you have quite the incredible background. I was looking at your website and seeing everything that you've done. You have been a tower climber, a welder, a snowcat operator, a dog trainer, a jet pilot. You've pretty much done it all.
Yeah. Well, that just means I'm really old.
Experienced.
And you know what else it means? It means you don't get to quit. I mean, people who don't get to do a lot didn't try a lot. And so I'm encouraging everybody, just keep going.
I like that. So out of all of those titles, which one came first? What started at the very beginning? What's the trajectory been like on this?
Well, I guess the first one would have been welder. I was a welder up on the Iron Range of Northern Minnesota. And I met this girl and I asked her if she would marry me. And she said, well, you have to ask my dad. And so I went and asked her father and he said, oh, okay, welder, where are you going to college? And I'm like, anywhere you want, sir. If that's the price of entry, I'm all in. So we went back to school, went to married student housing, got out. No local jobs for me, so got a job in the big city of Minneapolis. From there, moved to Denver and built houses and did lots of different stuff. Swore I'd never move to Seattle. Moved to Seattle for a job. Only spent 27 years there, but there we started a business. Climbing towers, and that led to snowcat operation and the dog handling and lots of different stuff that was really a part of where we lived and who we hung out with. So it was great.
My dad is going to love listening to this, and he's also going to pull in I told you so. When I was figuring out what I wanted to do with my life as a high schooler, he was, one, pushing me towards being in the National Guard because they would pay for your school. But two, even still to this day, I am 30 years old. I haven't been in college for over a decade now. And he still looks at me and goes, you know, Ab, there's always jobs for welders. You should really learn how to weld.
It's a perishable skill, though. You can quote me on that.
I'm going to use that. Dad, it's perishable.
There you go. But you know what? It's coming back because AI can't really take over welding. Robots might be able to a little bit, but not custom stuff.
So, exactly.
Learn how to weld, Abby. What are you thinking?
I know. I'm wasting my time podcasting. I should be out welding something. That's amazing. Well, I also was scouring your website and I see you do a lot of public speaking. And I would love to kind of hear what it was like transitioning from more of the trade side of things to more of the public speaking side of things. Because I think a lot of people don't really necessarily see a connection with those two right off the bat. So what was that like?
Well, one of the things I found is that when you enter any industry, there's kind of a void of leadership. And so in our industry association, I got asked to join the leadership team. And it was a national trade organization. And I found myself on stage. And when I was up on stage, I just got an incredible vibe from it. The thing that really led to public speaking is one day I got off the stage, and this is in front of 2,000 year peers, so there's quite a bit of pressure. But I got off the stage, and this guy comes up to me, and he goes, you know, you spoke to us like 4 years ago, and you told us to do something. I took your advice, and I started a business, and now I've got like 74 employees. And I just wanted to say thank you because you've changed the entire trajectory of our family history. And I was like, wow, if you can impact people that way from a stage, and you have a gift for inspiring people, and you don't use it, shame on you. So that's what led to this stage. And frankly, that's even what led to the podcast somewhat.
That's incredible. And like hearing it come from someone else saying that you have changed the way that their family is set up for generations to come, just based on words you spoke and inspired into someone else. That's powerful.
Yeah. And it also is inspiring to the person who's coming off the stage. So Actually, if you're in an audience and you enjoyed somebody speaking, don't hesitate to go up and tell them, what is it about what they said that hit you in a way that impacted you? Because it's valuable to somebody come. We don't always know if what we're saying is resonating with some people, because, you know, you get applause and that's great, but real honest feedback is priceless.
I have a lot of clients who are public speakers with podcasts, and I hear them say that too. It's like, they're like, a lot of the times I feel like I'm going up there and I'm talking into a void, because yes, they clap. Yes, they look engaged, but afterwards no one says anything. But every now and then there'll be that one person that comes up and says, hey, what you said hit really close to home and it meant a lot. And it means a lot on both sides, which is so powerful. I love that.
For sure. And the other thing is if someone's sitting at the back of the room and they're signing books or something like that, go and have a conversation with them, because speaking is by its very nature a bit of a lonely business. Because think about this. I get on a plane and I fly somewhere and I go to a hotel alone and I eat alone. And then I go to a venue alone. I'm working in my mind. I spend hours for every 5 to 10 minutes on stage just in my prep work. And I'm working through that, because everything is individual for an audience. But when I step on that stage, it's the first time really that I'm not alone. And then I'm looking out over this sea of people, and the only thing I can see is the 7 lights that are pointed right at my pupils. And then I get down and I'm a pretty high energy speaker. And so when I get off the stage, man, I'm sweating and I give it my all. But then people come up to you and people start arguing and stuff like that. But when you sit down at a table and start signing books for people, don't be afraid. If you're in the audience, don't be afraid to engage. We love and want to talk.
I think that chunk is getting clipped out of this podcast and posted everywhere, because we're getting into what I like to call conference season, and people are going to be going to these places, seeing these people talk. So that's just some really valuable information to, one, not only let the speaker know that what they said was important, let you share your opinion with the speaker, but also just like create a connection. You never know where a new friendship is going to bloom just from stopping by, saying hi during a book signing afterwards. I think that's just really good advice.
It is wonderful. And not only that, what happens from that is people come up to me and they're like, I wish I could have someone get you come to my other organization. I'm like, okay, let's make that happen. Here's my business card and here's how to follow up. And so there's some instruction manual, because people aren't, you know, there's bureaus, speakers bureaus, and there's event producers, and there's things like that. But the real connection happens between the audience and the person who's actually doing their level best to entertain, inspire, and impact an audience. And bringing, in my case, all I have to offer is the wisdom that I learned through training by trauma. And when I bring that to the table, you guys get cheap tuition.
I like that, cheap tuition. So let's get into some of what your keynote speeches are, because I was thumbing through them on your website, and there's like, honestly, all of them I would gladly sit through. Like if you wanted to just do a marathon of them, I would gladly sit front row, because they sound so amazing. So give me the rundown on your keynote speeches, because I think they're just fascinating topics.
You know, some of the best ones actually don't even come from me. I was supposed to do this speech in Denver, and I called them up and you're dealing with a committee, and I'm like, so I do this thing on leadership. It's natural for you. It's good to do the 7 C's of leadership. You guys are going to love it. And they're like, actually, we don't think we want that. And I'm like, hey, Jim, time to listen. And so I said, what is it you're looking for? And they said, well, the market in our industry is incredibly uncertain right now. Everybody's nervous about their job. People who come to this conference aren't looking for someone to tell them how to lead. They're looking for someone to tell them how to survive. They're like, whoa. Okay. And so I developed a keynote called Embrace Uncertainty. And it really surrounded trying to put a little salve on the uncertainty of the marketplace. And if you think about it, whatever your business you're in, if you think interest rates are going to go up or interest rates are going to go down, you're right. If you think the government taxation problem is going to get better or get worse, you're right. If you think that regulation on a local level, whether it be building permits or planning and zoning, is going to be altered, you're right. And so if we prepare and embrace that uncertainty, then we're way ahead of our competitor who's he's still fretting about it. She's still worrying about it. And what we're doing is preparing for the eventuality that change is going to happen. And if we embrace it as something that can give us a competitive advantage all of a sudden changes our friend. We can embrace uncertainty. And I talked to it from a perspective of I had a really super bad ski accident. And at one point, I don't want to give away the whole thing, but the doctor said, I told the doctor what he was going to do. You're going to fix my leg. It's going to be 2 days. He goes, actually, if we don't operate in the next 2 hours, you're going to lose your left leg. And I was like, what? Okay. All of a sudden, Doc wins. Jim's opinion doesn't matter. And so, but that was a very uncertain time in my life. And out of that came incredible victory, including with my grandkids.
That's absolutely amazing. And you're so right. Like when I saw the title of your Embracing Uncertainty keynote, I'm like, it's so true, because we can sit here and try to predict what's going to happen. But whether a prediction comes true or not, something changed, something moved. Yeah. There's always uncertainty.
Yeah. And if you anticipate uncertainty and you get ready for it, you're going to be 10 steps ahead of whoever didn't. And that's really most people. Because most people, I say it this way, worry is like a rocking chair. It might keep you busy, but you're never getting.
That is the perfect visual. It is so true.
And if we spend our time moving towards an objective instead of rocking back and forth, guess what? We're going to be ready, more ready than anybody else for it.
Got to get up out of the chair and start moving.
There you go.
I love that. Yeah. So in all of your speaking, do you have like a certain event that's like really stood out to you as one that was like really memorable, one of your favorites that you've ever done?
You know, there are so many favorites. There are some that you just remember because they were primary for a reason. One that I remember was the first time I stood in front of my peers, and it was a trade association. And like I said, there's 2,000 people out there. We had an auction to raise money for Fallen Tower Climber. And the auctioneers that we were going to hire wanted 30% of the take of it. And I'm like, that's a lot of money. So I learned how to auction. And so the first time you step in front of your peers and you're now an auctioneer, it is pretty daunting. And so I remember that one. My first healthcare, when I went out of my comfort zone and talked to an organization about healthcare. Like, wow, this is really going to be hard because they're experts and I'm not. But what I was giving them was the patient's perspective. Now, I'm the expert and they're not. And so we're able to take our shared experiences and put them to use for good. The same thing, I did a banker's conference, and as the bankers are there, you know, you usually sit in front of a banker and you're waiting them to say yes or no on a loan, and you have a zero positions of power and influence. And now I'm trying to help them serve their clients better. And I know a lot about serving clients simply because I've had to do so for about 40 plus years. And all of a sudden they're listening to me like I'm this objective authority. And it is, because I am. I operate from my frame of reference so they can see where other people sit, stand, and occupy the customer seat. And when that happens, it's really a beautiful thing because we both learn from
it. Yeah, it's getting that other perspective that they don't usually have. And you're there and now you're in the expert shoes, which it's got to feel really fun.
Yeah. And one of the things is there's a lot of people out there like celebrity speakers. They stand up and they give the same speech every time. And it generates an applause because it's cool. It's a shared experience. But I don't want to relate a shared experience so much as I want to relate. I want to take them on a trip through my eyes with my neurons to the place and how I felt and what triggered it. So if it was a good feeling, what triggered it? In the healthcare thing, I encourage people to be a hero. And you know what? When there's a hero in healthcare, people who come for your services are always vulnerable. They're always sometimes at their most vulnerable, and so are their families. And they get very little part in the decision-making process. So when you want to be a hero to them, give them information that's accurate and timely and gives them some semblance of control over the whole process that's foreign to them. It's really when all of a sudden they see that from the perspective of someone who's, you know, literally laying on a table, all of a sudden it becomes an asset for them. And from the administration all the way down through the physicians and the nursing staff, all the way down to the CNAs and the janitors, any one of those people can be a hero. It's awesome.
I love that. Truly think that it's what's wonderful about your keynote speeches and your attention to detail with it is it can be applied to so many different sectors. You're not just talking to the people that you've worked with for 40 years. You're branching out to the healthcare and all those other ones. And I think that's really cool because the principles can be applied to even the person listening to this podcast right now wanting to start a podcast. Like you can just cherry pick those things that really mean something to you and apply them to your life.
You know, in podcasting, everybody tells you to pay attention to the algorithm. And I'm like, I can't even spell that. I don't even know what it is. You know what I want to pay attention to? I want to pay attention to the people who want to listen. And I want to be so impactful that they go, hey, did you hear this guy? This old dude on YouTube is changing the way that millennials think because he really wants us to love the Gen X or the Gen Ys. And when we can do that kind of thing, I mean, we're cross-generational pollinators of niceness. It's awesome.
I like that. Cross-generational pollinators of niceness.
There you go. Just like a bee, we're buzzing around and we're making sure that we're pollinating with niceness.
That's so cute. So let's get into your podcast because we talked about earlier, I love the name, the Grampian. Iconic. Absolutely iconic. Tell me everything about your podcast. How'd you get started on your journey? Give me all the details and all the lore.
Okay. Well, the podcast, the Grampian didn't come first. I was actually in our shop in Western Washington and I went out to the shop and I saw this dude there and I thought, wow. And I didn't know him. And I asked who he was and he looked at me, he says, I'm not going to use his name. I'm so-and-so. And I work for you. And I was like, word. I have somebody who works for me. I don't even know their name. Usually I knew everybody's name, their wife's name. I knew most of their kids. And all of a sudden we had multiple locations and had people. So we immediately started what we called Legacy Radio. The name of the company was Legacy Telecommunications. And we did a live radio show where it was call-in. And it wasn't literally on the radio, but it was kind of like in a talk radio format. Some of my guys came to me and they're like, you can't do live. People are going to ask questions that you don't want to answer. And I'm like, I think I can handle it. I'm pretty sure. So we're doing the very first one. And the guy calls up and he's like, hey, Jim, I was just wondering how much do you make? And I'm like, great question. But before I answer your question, let me ask this. How much do you make? And he said, I don't really want to say in front of all these people. I'm like, me neither. Next question. Let's go. And I found out that it was okay not to answer and not to have the right answer. But this is a way that I engage my people with my thought processes for 15 minutes every week. And we merged our companies with some other company and it became bigger. And all of a sudden, now there's almost 1,000 people that align from Seattle to South Florida. And everything south of that line, we have to engage them. And so we started a podcast with video and we couldn't do it live because we're in different time zones. So we started embracing the video portion of it. We called it On Radio and we did like 80 episodes of that and the people loved it. And then when I got ready to retire, I was like, I really miss that. I really miss touching people, even if it's through this electronic medium. And that's what started the new podcast, but we didn't know what to call it at first. I was with my grandson, Wesley, and we were at a lake cabin. Loved in Minnesota, but we were in Washington. We were at a lake cabin, and we were playing cribbage. And for you young folks, that's a card game where you use a board to count pegs. If you need lessons, go back to the Midwest.
Yeah, it's a very Midwestern game.
Exactly. Anyway, I beat Wesley at cribbage, and Wesley is a very competitive young man. He stood up with a start, and he said, you're not grandpa. I'm like, what? You're not champion. What are you talking about, man? He goes, you are the Grampian. And it stuck. And I would never be so bold as to name myself the Grandpa Champion, but I really loved it when Wesley gave me that handle. And so when we started a podcast, we said, hey, let's call it the Grampian. And Wesley, if you go onto the podcast, is my very first guest. And he tells you about how it happened.
That is so sweet. So how many grandkids do you have?
19.
Oh, my goodness.
That includes a brand new granddaughter-in-law. But she's a grandkid now.
That is so exciting. What's their age ranges?
Two twins just born 3 months ago and 22 on the oldest side.
Oh, my gosh.
And just married. Yeah.
That is so exciting.
And every range in between. I mean, I've got babies, I've got toddlers, I got preteens, I got teens, I got college age and 20s and high school, everything. So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
The holidays must be absolute chaos, but in the best way.
In the best way. You know what the cool part is that grandkids, don't get mad at me, people, but kind of like dogs. Dogs keep you young if you're old. If you're on Medicare, go get a dog. It'll keep you.
Solid advice.
Or go get some grandkids, because this last summer, and it goes back to my leg. The doctor told me, he said, hey, you'll never run again. And I was like, that's awesome. I never liked running anyway. But then one of my grandkids said, hey, let's sign up for this Spartan race. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't know if I can do that. You know, that turned into, you know what? By train, I bet I can do that. And so we run a 5K Spartan sprint type race, one every summer. And this last summer, I think I ran it with 7 grandkids. So now there were, one of them's a college football player. I did not beat him. As a matter of fact, there's none of them that I really beat. There's some that I finished with. But at 66 years old, to be able to get through that is pretty epic, especially when you get to run it with grandkids.
I was just going to say how special that is to be able to do that together as a family. Like, that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was awesome. And we'll start prepping now for next year once the holidays are over.
Yeah.
Once I get rid of that Thanksgiving turkey and Christmas ham.
Yep. That's a January project.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So back to your podcast. So you're doing audio and video for it?
Audio and video. And we're on, our primary distribution is YouTube, but Apple Podcast and Spotify and iHeartRadio, and I'm going to miss 5 of them, are all part of it. And I've got a wonderful fellow that produces for me in Cheney, Washington. It's just been crazy. I was out to dinner with my wife and my phone just started blowing up. And it was like, usually I just leave it down, but it was like, it was really blowing up. And it was the producer and some other folks saying, hey man, you just went over 50,000 subscribers. And I was like, oh my word.
That's a huge milestone.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. And especially in only 2 years, because they told me I'd get to 10,000 in 2 years. And so we're at 2 years and at 50,000. So I'm pretty happy. We must be doing something right.
I would say you're doing something right there. And yeah. I love that you're doing audio and video, because as much as I am kind of an audio podcast purist, I only listen to audio podcasts. Mm-hmm. That's just where I prefer to be. But I know how important video is. And that's why this podcast, Abby the Podcast Lady, is also a video podcast. And I produce video podcasts for people. It's so important. Just all that you can do with chopping it up to be reels and TikToks and shorts and sharing it across social media, the video element is so important.
It's essential now. I don't think you could actually do it without it, even though I would say that there's a lot of these pods that play on Apple, just because there's so much Apple density out there. If you look at the number of phones and devices and things like that. But there are these other little venues where they're playing podcasts. It's pretty incredible. I was actually, I went to a Krav Maga studio, and that's a Israeli martial arts studio. And they have my podcast playing on audio. It was really awesome.
That's cool.
And there was not 4 people there, but it was like, hey, that audio portion is absolutely necessary.
Right. It's so important. I love that. Like, you showed up somewhere, it's playing. Like, that is so special.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't experienced that since I was a radio DJ, when I'd walk in somewhere and my voice was coming over on a commercial somewhere. But it's a weird feeling.
Yeah, it is. It is. Especially, you know, we're kind of programmed not to enjoy or like listening to our own voice. And that's the way that neurologically we're built. But when you do it and it's in public, it's pretty cool.
It really is. So with your podcast, hitting those huge milestones, what's kind of next on the radar for? Do you have another goal set after hitting those 50,000? Like, do you have another like milestone you're kind of like aiming for?
You know, I want to have such a great podcast that people click on it. That's obviously number one. But to have it be interesting enough where they stay on it. And part of that is introducing guests that are really engaging. And I don't mean celebrity engaging. I mean, there's so many interesting people out there. There's a guy that I interviewed, and he's 68 years old. His name is Gary Irvin. He has climbed the tallest 7 mountains on 7 continents, finished that, and then he took a sled on skis, and he drug it from like from the edge of the Arctic or the Antarctic ice cap all the way to the South Pole. And his next goal at 69 would be to take that a different sled, but that same path up north in the Arctic where there's polar bears and open water and things like that. And he's going to do that just for a challenge. And every time he does it, he jots down notes, and those notes have turned in to a book for his grandchildren.
Oh, how so incredible.
Yeah, you're sitting at base camp of Mount Everest writing notes for your grandchildren. I mean, just being there is inspiring. Imagine what those notes are going to turn into, whether it's a children's book or a, I don't know, but I can tell you I'm buying that.
Yeah, 100%. Send me the link when you find it, because I am all over that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is the power of podcasting. I mean, you meet those interesting people like that. You have them on your show, and then all of a sudden you're staying in touch with them long after the show is over. And it's you just meet so many cool, fun people.
And I learn so much from every podcast. There's actually a Minnesota kid who is not a kid anymore. He's 50, sorry. But he and his wife wrote a book about their healthcare experience in Minnesota. And it's called Our Fear Never Sleeps. And it is such an emotional and raw description of what it feels like when there's nothing you can do. It's that healthcare thing again, but there's nothing you can do. And they've given you a diagnosis that's really, really difficult to swallow. And so he talks about understanding and then claiming what's possible. And I learned so much from him. His name is Eric Gabrielson. And go listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Thinking about it in the context of like even rewinding 30 years ago and like how we would consume these interesting stories would be like late night TV. But the bulk of them are already people who are celebrities. Now, everyday people like you and me get to share our cool experiences and hear other people's cool experiences on our own platforms and get it out for the world to consume. And I just think that it's magical. There's no other way to describe it.
Yes, ma'am. And also the long form podcast allows you to explore it with greater depth than any late night television program or anything like that ever allowed. Because you can always click off and come back, or you can say, hey, I want to listen to that again. There's so many podcasts that I listen to where like, you know, I really learned a lot, but I think I missed some stuff. I'd like to listen to that again.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a repeater. If there's a good episode of something, I'm going back for it a second time around.
Right on. So how do you judge podcasts? I mean, as a producer, you get an opportunity to look at things with a little bit more critical eye and a little bit more experience than the rest of us. How do you judge a podcast?
Everyone is put through a different filter in my mind, but all kind of the same one. It's all based on how I know if they have an external producer like you do who hires someone out to help make their show, or if they're doing it themselves. I have a pretty good ear and an eye for it. I can usually tell if they have an external producer or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just love consuming audio content. I listen to so many shows every single week. And when I find one I really like, I just latch onto it. And I can always tell like the little intricate things they do, like if they're doing their introductions live and they're playing sound effects live, or if they're adding it in post. Like I have a pretty fine-tuned ear for that kind of thing. And I love sitting and not necessarily picking it apart and determining whether things are good or bad, just picking it apart and trying to think about what their process was to make it and deliver a finished product.
You know, that's my goal with the podcast. You asked earlier what the goal is with the podcast, and I want to make it better. Every time we step out, I want to make it better. And to that end, I had a grandson call me recently, and he's like, Grandpa, I'm like, yeah, man. He says, I got to tell you something, and you're probably not going to like it too much. I'm like, okay, I'm listening. He said, your audio sucks. Okay.
Wow.
Well, I actually had a couple where I accidentally disconnected my studio mic, and it was going through the computer mic. And what he was doing was saying, hey, technically you better get your stuff in a group because this ain't not working. And that's priceless because I would have never known. My producer should have told me, but he's in the throes of things too. So yeah.
I've had that before too, where clients will send me a piece of audio and I'm like, your microphone wasn't plugged in. And they're like, what do you mean it wasn't plugged in? I'm like, either it was loose or it wasn't plugged in. Like something went wrong. I'm going to do everything in my power to fix it and make it sound perfect. But just so you know, there's only so much I can do with computer audio.
You can only make so much ugly pretty.
Mm-hmm. There's only so much lipstick we can put on the pig before we got to send it out in the show ring.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on my show today. I'm so thankful that Podmatch got us hooked up. I like to wrap all of my guest interviews by asking the same question. And that question is, what is a podcast that you've been listening to lately and really enjoying that isn't your podcast?
Wow. It's very difficult to pick. I am a bit of a podcast junkie. So I will tell you that one that I really like lately is Josh Kosnick and his Spartan Leadership podcast, simply because he does a little bit deeper dive into the why. And that has been something that I've truly enjoyed. Also, I really love The Raw and the Searching of Sean Ryan. That's probably an easy one because, you know, he's so huge. But the reason he's so huge is just authenticity. And yeah, so, but I would say the one I enjoyed the most recently is probably Josh Kosnick, the Spartan Leadership.
Great recommendations. I'll make sure I get those linked in the show notes as well if people want to go check them out. And also in the show notes, where can everyone connect with you, get in touch with you, book you as a speaker, all that great stuff?
TheJimTracy.com, JimTracy.com, or find me on YouTube. I'd love to have you listen. Make sure you like me first.
You're a pretty likable guy, Jim. I don't think you're going to have a problem with that.
Also, in Minnesota, there's a place called Nationally Speaking.
Yes.
Nationally Speaking is a booking agent back in the Midwest that has done a fantastic job for me.
Oh, you're part of that organization?
Yes.
That's amazing.
I met them. So the voice of the Minnesota Vikings, Paul Allen, was on the podcast, and Paul and I have developed a kind of a friendship, and they represent him, and so they picked me up as well.
That's amazing. Congratulations. That's a huge honor.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's great. Well, appreciate thank you, Jim, that. So much. This has been so much fun, and we'll have to do it again sometime because you were just a delight.
Thank you, Abby. You are an amazing podcast lady.